You're listening to Live Free, Think Free on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
All right. Dang, I'm dark. Hey, welcome to Live Free, Think Free. I'm Mike. I'm here with co-host Derek, a longtime friend. And we've been doing this show, as you heard, more than 11 years now. And we're happy to continue to bring you thought-provoking news headlines outside the mainstream, or some analysis of the mainstream headlines that you may not have thought of, as well as just art and music and everything that we could find to talk about and kind of focus on freedom. So thank you, everybody. Absolutely. That's tuning in. I see you across different platforms. I know you can follow all the stories later. Say there's something we talk about that's interesting. You don't have to just go to our Spotify and play it again. You can go to HoustonFreethinkers.com and basically, you know, there'll be links to all the articles that we get into, so you can go a little bit more in detail. You can find out some facts we might not have mentioned, or, you know, just be engaged in the ideas in that manner. So very thankful for that, and thankful to everyone who goes and visits that website. Where else do we broadcast this?
We are live right now off four different places on Facebook: Wake Up News, Conscious Resistance, Derek Bro's page, Live Free, Think Free page. We're live on the Conscious Resistance on YouTube and the Conscious Resistance on Odyssey and Rockfin. And then, as you mentioned, Micah, this does get posted on our Spotify after the fact. It goes on BitChute, it goes on Hive and Telegram and all those great places. So to everybody who just joined us from Telegram or Odyssey, or just saw me tweet this out, or on got a text message about this, welcome. I hope you guys enjoy this. Today's episode is called The Age of Deep Fakes and Brain Chips Has Arrived. So we're going to go ahead and dive right into this. We got a lot to cover in the next 45 minutes to an hour. And the first few stories deal with the title that we're dealing with here today, Micah. You know, we've been talking about this for years. People have been warning about the dangers that AI could pose. Obviously, like, it's a tool, has benefits and potential downsides. We're at a point now where new technology like AI-generated art and AI-generated articles and AI is winning prizes and fooling humans and things of that sort. And people are starting to wonder, and certain technologists like Elon Musk and others are saying, like, hey, maybe we should put a pause on this for 6 months or a year. But then you got the other side saying, if we, this tool could potentially be dangerous, but if we put a pause on it, then the Chinese might do it first. So you've got a lot of interesting dialogue going on right now. And what we're going to cover today is a few bits of news. For one, AI obviously has been in the news. There was a congressional hearing just last week. And there's a couple pieces that we should add to the equation, Micah, for those who might not be aware of this. And maybe you missed this. I just kind of barely caught wind of it. A couple days ago, fake viral images of an explosion at the Pentagon were probably created by AI. A false report of an explosion at the Pentagon, accompanied by an apparently AI-generated image, spread on Twitter on Monday morning, sparking a brief dip in the spot market. There's no explosion or incident taking place at or near the Pentagon. There's no immediate danger. The Department of Defense's Pentagon Force Protection Agency said with the Arlington County Fire Department in a joint statement on Twitter. The fake image circulating on Twitter showed a black cloud of smoke near a building. The accounts posting it claimed it was the Pentagon, but the image was likely generated by AI, experts are saying. An example of potential for misuse of this increasingly popular and prevalent technology. Then there's some other people just saying, you know, looking at the way this particular image is, here, I'll show them on screen for those who are watching. It showed like the Pentagon, and it showed some fences out front, but because AI does have limitations, there are sometimes tells in the way that the images are made. So for those on screen, this is one of the potential AI generated images. There's the Pentagon, you see the fences surrounding, and there's a giant puff of smoke. People start looking at it a little closer, and they're looking at the way the fences are made, and it starts to see that there's like some weird blending, overlapping, which is sometimes an issue that AI has, like they do with fingers. They don't seem to be that great at getting human fingers down very good just yet. So that was one thing that happened this week, that RT apparently deleted it. A fake Bloomberg account had deleted it and then got, you know, or had tweeted it, and then it got deleted later. But this was spreading for at least an hour or more before it was starting to be fact-checked. And then we have this other one that happened about a week ago in Turkey. Turkey's deep fake influenced election spells trouble. This is coming from Fortune magazine. Yesterday's election in Turkey, again, this is a couple weeks ago, was momentous for a variety of reasons with major implications for geopolitics and domestic economy. But historians will remember these polls for one thing in particular, the role of tech-powered disinformation. Just days before the Sunday election, one of the best-known opposition candidates pulled out of the race. This was because of an alleged sex tape that was circulated on social media, which he claimed was a deepfake, that it wasn't him and he wasn't involved in this sex tape that was circulating on social media. Either way, he decided to withdraw from the race and was just like, all right, this is probably too much trouble. It's not worth it. Somebody's trying to get me out of the race. And in a place like Turkey, that could have some real consequences. So this main opposition candidate, Muharrem İnce, pulled out. And then another opposition candidate blamed Russia for this and other disinformation that they said was coming up to the election. Get your hands off the Turkish state. One of the candidates tweeted in Moscow's direction while telling Reuters they had evidence of Russia's involvement. Now, I would take all of that with a grain of salt. Nonetheless, though, a deep fake of a candidate in a major country like Turkey in a sex tape. And how do people know if it's real or not? Candidate saying it's not real. People saying, oh, come on, there's hard evidence. I haven't looked into this fully. But those two things, if an explosion at the Pentagon, not real, and then a sex tape, which may or may not be real or could be AI generated or, you know, just using somebody's image. This is the whole thing with deepfakes, for those who aren't familiar with that term. It's the idea of using your voice, your likeness, your face, your whatever, to impersonate and to maybe make you say things that you didn't say or do things you didn't do, like in the case of a sex tape. We talked a couple weeks ago about a story in Houston where a family had been scammed out of, I think, $10,000, maybe $30,000 when their daughter or their son was impersonated. Somebody called them using an AI-generated voice and said, hey, mom, dad, I got in a wreck, I'm in trouble, I need you to wire me money. And it all ended up being a scam. So that, I just want to start there, Micah, before we get deeper. What do you think about that? I mean, obviously the implications for elections. And I did a video years ago saying, how do we trust our, like, I think it was titled, like, how are we going to trust our eyes and ears? Just something as simple as that. And I don't really know how we can trust our eyes and ears when we're moving into situations like this.
I guess not the naive perceptions, right? But, you know, I don't know what to say about it. The one thing that kind of stands out to me, though, is throughout the article that you read, you know, it says, like, by AI. You know, I think that word, you might not catch much on that, but I think it's kind of misleading because it's not as if AI is out there itself just saying, oh, I got an idea, let me tweet this. No, an individual is using it, like an individual that would use a gun or something, right? It's an individual that uses the tool. So when we say that they were created by AI, we really kind of mean that they were created using AI by a human being that then used them in whatever nefarious way. So I don't know, but I think that's an important part. I mean, it sounds trivial. And of course, people go, oh, it's not the AI that's doing it. Not yet. So I don't know what to think about that. But, you know, there have been disturbing counterfeits all through our history. And this is probably just the most cutting edge tool to create said, you know, counterfeits. I don't know how you could control it. It'd be like trying to control ink and paper to stop people from, you know, publishing counterfeit books or counterfeit currency or something. I'm at a loss for it. I imagine we'll hear a lot more as the show goes on. Glad to see so many people tuning in. And I'm wondering, have y'all been hearing about AI in terms of, you know, the threats? I guess more and more so. You know, there's been these news articles about threats from AI, regulating AI, and that sort of thing. And I guess with these concerns also come the articles revealing why there might be a concern. What do we do in the face of this? Do we not have a technology because, you know, someone might use it for nefarious purposes? It seems like most technologies we still go ahead and have and hope that humanity will be able to, you know, deal with it and use the tool for so much good that it outpaces the negative use of the tool. I don't know. I mean, you could go back to fire even and say, oh my God, we need to regulate fire because these other cave people, you know, they're burning down the forest, or they came over and attacked our little tribe and they used fire. So I don't know where you draw the line. It seems like there's always a group in power trying to control the new ideas that are coming out, the new tools that are coming out. And for the most part, I think I'd stand in opposition to that, but I do think we're heading into a world of entirely new troubles. And when you think of like the stated goal of Operation Mockingbird. Now you've got this new tool that makes it even harder to know what to believe.
Yeah, and I wonder, Micah, do you think that something like AI poses any sort of, and obviously that's a broad term, right? But just, you know, in terms of deep fakes and all the weirdness we're dealing with, do you think it poses any sort of new threat? Like, you know, because I understand what you're saying, the argument about fire and like any other previous technology. Technocrats, tyrants will always try to say this technology is going to disrupt everything. We need to come in and control things. But do you think in terms of AI, like it's sort of opening a Pandora's box of something that is magnitudes different than, say, fire or the wheel or the printing press? I mean, obviously those created major changes in our society. But yeah, do you think there's any argument to be made about that, that this represents some kind of unique threat?
Certainly, and maybe just to reiterate that first point, a printing press, as you said, obviously, you know, that could compete with fiat currency. Anybody could just print up some fakes, right? So the point being, I do think that your concern, the question you ask about, are we going to have, you know, a whole new, is this somehow more dangerous than what we've seen in past technological leaps? And I'd say every technological leap is dangerous because we have certain fundamental assumptions about the way we conduct our lives beforehand, right? Before the plane, we figured it would take this long to get, you know, to part of the United States or overseas or something, right? Luckily, those sort of assumptions don't have, you know, big negative effects. Maybe you think you're going to need longer on vacation or something. But when we come to the AI situation, the assumptions are that that's my son's voice, or that that's that politician, or that our government said this, or that the Pentagon's on fire. The assumption is that our eyes and our media is not misleading us. You know, whether we're talking about a Twitter tweet from some obscure account holder or from, you know, perhaps something a little bit more credible. So as more and more fakes are entered into the system, we see, you know, we see hacks all the time. We see different companies who profess to have to take care of our data, lose our social security numbers, right? We see this type of stuff happen on the regular. I think this type of stuff will also happen with AI. People will use hacks combined with AI to basically make it look like your phone company is calling you, or your landlord is sending you an email, or God forbid, you're going to do a wire transfer because they're going to hop in there and give you the entire wrong routing number, and you're not even going to know about it until after the money's been sent, you know? So there's a lot of new dangers, but they all tie to that same thing, our presuppositions that life will always be the way we've known it.
Yeah, and I think that, I don't know if it's completely powered by AI at the moment. I would imagine some of them are. But anybody who spent time on Telegram or Twitter or some of these platforms, they're full of bots. Like there's accounts that create fake accounts that look like they have my name and use the same picture and the same description. And they message people and say, hey, are you preparing for the coming collapse? And start trying to give people financial advice and say, oh, yeah, if you just send me a little bit of money, I'll send you this token. And it's going to make a lot of money. And there has to be some sort of bot program, which may be AI generated, because it happens so fast. We'll notice like, okay, the same name just joins 30 groups at once, all the groups that we admin. So they're kind of in our network, and they have unfortunately scammed a couple people pretending to be myself or some other of our associates. So those things are happening. And then obviously for decades now, way before AI, old folks have been at risk of just people calling them and say, hey, I'm with this company and we need you to send this money. And so I imagine those things probably will get worse, and maybe we'll see some improvements as well. Let's go ahead and continue, though, because this AI conversation is really just, it's not going anywhere. And just this past week, Sam Altman, who many of you may be familiar with, he is the CEO of OpenAI, who is the company behind the ChatGPT, which has become so popular along with Microsoft and Google's. You know, they've got, they're working on all this kind of stuff. Well, so Sam Altman, OpenAI CEO, testified in front of the U.S. Senate last week, and he was calling for licensing AI. He thinks that this is going to be better for the industry, and, you know, he's kind of saying there are some concerns, and he thinks this is the best next steps. So I wanted to just talk about this for a moment, because I wrote this article, like, for one, who is this Sam Altman guy? And just let's look a little bit into his past and that kind of thing. Worked with Elon Musk to help develop this OpenAI. Elon Musk actually has since left the company because he said it was supposed to be open source, and now they're going with a proprietary model, and they were apparently using Twitter's data of of Twitter's users to build their one of the sources to build their AI database. And Elon Musk actually recently cut ties to that and said, you can't have access to this data, I guess because he's upset that he's not along with the company. But anyways, so they're calling, Sam Altman's calling for licensing regulation. And I thought it was interesting that Fortune had a different perspective. They said, quote, Altman's advocacy for some rules is not surprising. Technologies companies know that regulation is likely coming, and they are trying their best to shape it to their advantage. And basically the argument is that these CEOs may decide that licensing them allows them to protect their code to their AI, to their proprietary models, and also that they are probably afraid of things like open source AI, which obviously open source, open code, people can use it, you can adapt it, you can do all kinds of different things. And people are already doing this, trying to fork ChatGPT and create their own versions of personal AI bots. And I have some friends who are diving fully into it. Honestly, it's not my thing, but I know friends who are using AI to tell them what code do they need to create the website they want, how to come up with the code for an app and doing it in minutes compared to weeks or months. And I mean, maybe this will, in the end, all be people like me will be left behind while they use AI to, you know, accomplish great things without having to spend so much time laboring over code and other tools that AI can help out with. I don't know. I'm skeptical about it. But overall, the push last week was we need regulation. We need AI. You had Senator Josh Hawley saying that this is, again, Micah, they mentioned the printing press. He said that the coming out of the AI coming into the existence is similar to the printing press and the nuclear bomb. He said that one, the printing press empowered humanity. The other option is that it ends up being like the nuclear bomb, where it's a, quote, huge technological breakthrough with severe, terrible consequences. So that's part of the conversation. But the other thing I wanted to mention is that literally just days after this guy, Sam Altman, spoke at the U.S. Congress, Senate, he was in Lisbon, Portugal for the Bilderberg meeting. And for those of you who don't know, let's just go to Google. I'm sure we can trust Google. Let's search Bilderberg meeting 2023. Interesting, now they have it listed, whereas during and before they had no coverage of it. Like, let's just search the news and see what's coming up. One report from Charlie Skelton 6 days ago, one report from CNBC, then you get a local Portugal paper, Fox Business covered it the day it happened. So no coverage prior, though. Total secretive. This the, now you got to go back as far as 2018 because there was really no reporting on this. Well, lots of people are talking about the World Economic Forum, not so many people talking about the Bilderberg Group. And the Bilderberg Group, as they have been doing the recent years, they posted a list of participants and general topics on the day it began. But there was independent media like Dan Dix of Press for Truth out in Canada. Him and some other journalists went to Lisbon, Portugal. They had got they got some sources. They went to the hotel, and they noticed that barricades were getting set up. And then before you know it, they start locking the whole place down. And you got you know, foreign minister of affairs for countries. You got University of Toronto professor of economics. And here you go, Sam Altman, CEO, OpenAI. You got leader of the Social Democratic Party, staff writer of The Atlantic. You know the deal, Micah. Heads of state, corporations, journalists. President of the World Economic Forum, Henry Kissinger was there. Of course, he had to be wheeled in with multiple machines to keep him alive. I think he turns 100 tomorrow. So I just found that interesting that literally days after testifying in front of Congress about AI and calling for licensing and stuff, this guy's in Portugal for the Bilderberg Group. And then I want to mention one other point about him that may be of relevance to some of our audience. This Sam Altman guy is also working on another project, Micah, called the WorldCoin. And WorldCoin claims that it is going to be a way that can help humanity deal with the disruption that AI is going to cause. They're saying because AI is going to disrupt so much, we need a way to help people out. So WorldCoin is here to save the day. It is going to be a, they're saying it could be a form of universal basic income that can help people who are out of jobs. And again, one day before he testified in Congress, it was reported that he had secured $100 million in funding for WorldCoin. WorldCoin is going to be a cryptocurrency, is what they're calling it. But in order to get your WorldCoin tokens, your universal basic income, you have to let their, what they call orb, scan your irises so that you can get your unique biometric identity that nobody else can use. And it's, this is going to be the first inclusive global currency, which allows you to verify your unique personhood with the orb that scans checks an individual as real and is unique and has not previously signed up. It does this by capturing and processing images of an individual and their unique iris pattern. They claim that they do not keep these irises, and they're saying that people who sign up will receive 25 free WorldCoin tokens whenever it launches shortly. So there's a lot going on with this guy, Sam Altman, and his involvement with OpenAI, ChatGPT, speaking at Bilderberg Group, and working on some interesting projects. I don't know where you want to pick that up, Micah, but that's, you know, just some more AI news taking place this last few days.
Wow. I don't know. Universal basic income from, you know, the elite there that pretend to be capitalist and pretend to be, you know, I guess the real representatives of their nations. You know, there's a lot of pretending to be in this thing that seems bought up with a lot of artificial money, artificial intelligence, a lot of pretending to be going on here. I'm not trying to be too smart aleck with that. It just is unnerving. So, you know, they're coming out saying it's going to be disrupted. I've not dug much into it other than, you know, the various scary stories we've read about and heard of the fakes, right? How's it going to be disruptive? What's it going to do? Is it going to be disruptive by cutting down the time that people waste? How's it? They don't really spell that out too much, yet they go straight to like some new universal cryptocurrency that's based on our iris scan. You know, more data that the elite here, or whatever you want to call them, more data that this closed circle will get in exchange for, you know, some tokens. You know, that right now there's not, I would say right now, I would argue they don't have any value. Now, maybe later they will, but, you know, this is the same thing we're talking about. They were taking people's Twitter information. You just mentioned that earlier. Why wouldn't they take your iris scan information later when it serves them? Okay, great. You got 25 pennies. Yay. You know, like I think it's going so fast and they're doing so much over here that your average person doesn't have, you know, much of a chance to digest it. At the same time, all this other craziness is going on in the world. And then these people decide what's best for the world, you know? And this is just another front.
Yeah, it's like you said, I mean, there's no, WorldCoin hasn't even launched yet. Yeah, he got $100 million investment or whatever, but there's still no guarantee that it's going to be worth anything.
It's truly disturbing that they're trying to also burden open source generators, you know, basically open source people who might want to work in this technology. It's as if Ford created a car and then said, oh my God, cars are dangerous. We need to have only one auto manufacturer. We need to license these auto manufacturers. Otherwise, you know, Chevrolet might just make one in his garage over there, or Hyundai or whoever, and the wheel will fly off and people will die. You know, I mean, come on. We're talking about something that your average person really doesn't know how it works. They might start to grasp how they can use the tool, but they don't know. It's like when they go in their car and they turn the key. A lot of people don't know how their car works. I mean, forgive me for everyone that does know, but a lot of people don't. They don't know how a lot of things in their house work. The computer just comes on and we type on it and communicate. And I think that's where we're going to be with AI. So what's going to happen? These people get loud enough that they manage to force their way through, and a creation or slash discovery that would be there for any mind to figure out now becomes locked down to, you know, this closed group of artificial intelligence, artificial this, world leaders and pretending to be capitalists. But you get what I'm saying? It's not clear, and we don't know where we're going. And, you know, these stories, they're designed in such a way to tell us about the fear and the dangers and the need for licensing and control and regulation. So I'm not trying to pretend it's not scary.
Yeah, no, but I think that this is why it's important to ask critical questions, right? And to not just fall into the, like, hey, it's going to be a sunny day, AI is going to fix everything, rainbow and cupcakes, or like, it's the end of the world and we've never dealt with emerging technology. I think there is a balance. You know, I'll throw one other thing into the hat. Here's our buddy Bill Gates saying that AI is going to destroy search engines and Amazon. He said that you will never use AI again in this, use search engines again in this future, nor will you use Amazon, because we will have our own personal artificial intelligence bots, assistants. I'm going to show you guys one more piece of that technology in just a moment and ask if our audience would wear it, if you would wear it, Micah. But so they're imagining that the Alexas and the Echoes and all those kind of stuff, which I don't have interest in, these AI assistants will become like either wearable, implantable, et cetera, some way that they're going to be on us. And you'll just say, Siri or whoever, you get to name it and, you know, give it your personal avatar. I'm seeing this as well. I think we talked about that on Snapchat. Your kids have now ChatGPT as part of the account, and they can give it its own name and give it an avatar, which to me is further like creating the idea that it's a person or entity or whatever. But yeah, so Bill Gates is saying that he's predicting AI assistants will, quote, read the stuff you don't have to read, and allowing users to get to information without having to use a search engine like Google. But this goes back to me of like AI, like everything else, it's going to be dependent on who's programming it and what is the data set that they're learning from, right? So if they're learning from a data set that says Big Pharma is a conspiracy and all vaccines are safe, et cetera, well, then the AI is going to give you that same answer. You know, it's not like it's going to come up with something else, you know? So, and I've heard Musk say he wants to have a truth bot, truth AI for some, you know, for that reason, so that people get accurate information. But it's going to be interesting, right? Because there will be people, just how people say, oh, well, Google said this, so it must be true. There's going to be people who said, my AI assistant told me it's true, so it's got to be true.
So, unless we all get a whole bunch of different AI assistants that tell us a diversity more than maybe Google and the various search engines could tell us. Maybe our phones become so customized, they give us so much diverse information that it's hard to check or know. And people, maybe, this is just a scary story of it, maybe communication gets even worse because everybody has their own private little AI through their own private little data set that's like their feed, you know, like their feed is narrower and narrower. So do their recommendations from AI. And so AI, you know, we could be dumbed down just by accepting, you know, the answer from the calculator rather than knowing. Exactly.
I mean, people already accept if it says go left instead of right. And then sometimes anybody who's ever experienced this, when you happen to still have the maps on or whatever, and you're in a neighborhood you already know, and you're like, why is this stupid thing telling me to go this way? I know this neighborhood better. And it takes you a route that it believes would be faster, but you know in your human mind, which still works, that I've been driving this road my whole life. I know I can get there quicker taking this barn, you know, going through the neighborhood or whatever. There's little things like that. The more dependent we come on them, those questions will get bigger. It won't just be like, oh, I took a left instead of a right. It'll be like, I believe this and took this action because the AI said so. But guys, you're listening to Live Free, Think Free. We're about 25 minutes into the show. We got a couple more tech stories. Kind of, we're talking about AI, deepfakes, talked about just how it's disrupting or if it's going to disrupt anything. We'll see. But one other one I wanted to touch on is this just update we got from Elon Musk's Neuralink company, just as of today, winning FDA approval for human study of brain implants. That's right. Just less than 6 months ago, we were reporting on when Elon Musk was showing off this thing in their Neuralink presentation in Austin, Texas, and they were saying they were preparing for FDA approval. Now they have apparently got it. First in human clinical trial, critical milestone for the brain implant startup as it faces U.S. probes over its handling of animal experience. We talked about that too. The animals have died while, you know, testing this thing out. But let's go ahead and just rush into human trials, and we'll figure that investigation out later. Let's just go ahead and start putting it in people's heads. The FDA approval, according to Neuralink, quote, represents an important first step that will one day allow our technology to help many people. They did not disclose details of the planned study, and it says it's not yet recruiting. The FDA acknowledged in a statement that the agency cleared Neuralink to use its brain implant and surgical robot for trials on patients, but declined to provide more details. Neuralink and Musk did not respond for comments. So that is moving all along, and I want to show you, just in case you guys might remember, this is the article I wrote about it back in December. So yeah, it's been 6 months now, right on time, as Musk said. I called it Beyond the Hype, How Neuralink Advances the Transhumanist Agenda and Harms Innocent Animals. And you can kind of see on screen, this is the machine that is threading threads into the brain at rapid speed, and we talked all about that. We actually did a little clip and cut this out of that show when Mike and I talked about it. Called it Neuralink, Dead Monkeys, and Transhumanism. This is one of our most popular clips in the last 6 months or so. So clearly many of you are concerned about Neuralink, concerned about what it might mean. And here we are. They're getting ready for human trials. They're going to be putting these brain implants. We don't know the details. I'm not going to say we know what's happening, but there will be some form of study while at the same time the Neuralink company is under investigation for the ways that animals have died as part of their trials. So things are surely moving along pretty quickly, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because the basic, overview definition of a brain implant, which you mentioned. A brain or neural implant is a technological system that enables communication between the brain and electronic devices, thus permitting brain activity to be modified, recorded, and or translated for the manipulation of devices such as computer cursors or robotic arms. So, you know, a lot of times they're talking about helping disabled people with this. You know, that's the big promise, right? You know, people can walk again, people with like brain issues. So I just kind of, it's kind of like the, you know, when we talk about cryptocurrencies and the diversity of them, I think it's the same thing. There's a diversity of brain implants, and Neuralink is one of different brain implants. The science of what they're trying to do isn't going to go away, but then there's the other side of it, right? Like I just read, think about this. I mean, okay, they gather fingerprints to get your driver's license now, right? We talk about how things that used to be, I guess, cutting edge, like electricity in your homes, is now something whereby, you know, perhaps your kids will be taken away if you don't have them, if you don't have electricity in your home, right? So I wonder, when it talks about, you know, modifying, recording, and or translating the manipulation of devices using the brain activity. It's just such a vague and powerful statement that I feel like, you know, what happens, say, pedophiles, let's just start with a group of people that we might say, you know, let's get in their brain and let's start firing some things to like decrease desire, or let's short circuit these things, you know, like lobotomies back in the day. You know, where do we go with this? And I think that's kind of the concern I have, because, you know, we hear a lot about the good side, but I think that's how it always was, right? DDT is good for you. It kills bugs. It'll also kill you. Lobotomies, you know, they're more peaceful now. They're not so agitated. Yeah, they don't have any sympathy anymore either, because their frontal lobe, you know, which is a lot to do with like emotions and sensitivity, is now gutted. So I feel like it's similar to that. It's analogous to that. It's a dangerous field that we don't want to cut off the empowerment that understanding the proper use of it could perhaps do. We don't know yet. And so, you know, I'm sure Peter will be mad. Those type of things are often we study on animals, right? Because we want to know if this medicine will help. And we tend to think it's easier to test on a rat or a monkey than a human being. But when the tests come back, as you pointed out, with problems, to rush through before we've analyzed that, you got to ask yourself, what's the rush? What was the point of testing on these animals? Where are we really going with this? Is it all just medical, or is there a social control aspect? I don't know, but you know, we're talking about this stuff. So those are things that come to my mind.
Yeah. Thank you for exploring that, guys. We hope you are exploring this and maybe sharing your thoughts. If you're listening with friends and family, starting a discussion, comment wherever you're listening, Facebook, YouTube, Odyssey, Rockfin. We would love to read your comments and share with the audience. We're about to go to a quick music break. Before we do, I want to show you one other little development, Micah. Check out this. This is a video just premiered 2 weeks ago. This company is getting a lot of hype around it. And I think some of this is created hype. These tech companies seem to be pretty good about, you know, getting hype when they want it, whether that's through, you know, media or whatever. But this is called, it's from a company called Humane, and it's titled The Disappearing Computer, an exclusive preview of Humane's screenless technology with the founder. So it's a TED Talk. You guys can find that on YouTube and everywhere else. It's about 2 weeks old. But just check out, for those who can see on the screen, this, you can see he's wearing a black jacket. And if you can look at the bottom right of his jacket on the screen, there is a little device. It looks, it's like, it kind of looks like a pen. It's black, and it's attached to his shirt. That is the AI device that we're talking about. This is Humane's screenless technology. So this would replace a phone or replace other things. And what he shows himself here doing is just basically saying, AI or Siri or whatever the name is, and ask it a question. And then, you know, it projects, you're going to see here in just a moment, he holds out his hand and it projects from his chest pocket out of that little device onto his hand and shows like, oh, you have a call incoming, and it shows who the number is and all this kind of stuff. Here, let me skip ahead a little bit. Here you go. He's about to show his hand. Here comes the call. You see that right there? Bethany is calling, and it gives you, do you want to answer it or do you want to ignore it? That's coming out of that little AI assistant. Now, obviously, as you said, Micah, data, the new oil, that AI assistant is clearly going to be listening to you all the time and everything you're doing. but it's got some interesting, you know, it's like, okay, maybe this is the future. And I was talking with this about with Miriam recently, just about how so many of the things that as a young kid I saw maybe in TV or cartoons or even in the Jetsons, you're like, oh, one day in the future, we're going to have all this cool stuff. And some of it's still exciting, but a lot of it, now that it's here, is really kind of creepy. And just for some background, this is a report from a couple of months ago. Humane, a secretive AI startup founded by ex-Apple employees, raises another $100 million. That's the company behind this device. They're being pretty – this is the first time it was shown publicly at this TED Talk. But so, yeah, we're definitely moving. We're talking AI, deepfakes, brain implants, you know, wearable devices that project information on your hand. But of course, the next step would be like wearing a heads-up display, maybe contact lens or glasses that shows you all kinds of things on your periphery. Yeah, but just there's a lot happening. There's a lot in the tech world, AI, et cetera, happening right now.
And I think the benefits and the blessings and the curses of it are a lot less obvious than, say, the automobile, the tractor, the computer, the cell phone, because it's how it's used. It's more like the gun in that way. You know, you could have, you know, the diabolical empire, you know, $1 billion deciding to, you know, AI figure out which, you know, which crime we should commit and with the most likelihood of success and the least exposure and the most gain, you know, help us figure out the next pyramid scheme, you know, I mean, put AI to work on all the other things they're using their corrupt, crooked normal intelligence for. So I think it's just like, you know, good guys have guns, bad guys have guns, that sort of thing. And so all of a sudden you're going to have a lockdown on who can create this stuff. If the group that wants to license, regulate, and control it, which from what I understand, and typically we see this, is the industry itself. They want to get out ahead of everybody else creating a car or electricity or a computer.
And just like the oil industry now wants to regulate itself to fight climate change. They're so sure this is the answer now. There's usually, it feels like, an ulterior motive. Maybe it's just profit-driven or something else more nefarious. Well, all right, let's go to, it's been 35 minutes already and we still got more stories to go. Maybe it's time for a break. I'm going to throw it back to an old one, Mike. I'm looking here through our playlist and guys, we have probably 30, 40 songs that we've played over the last couple of years. We could use a whole lot more. We always want more music. So you got independent music, you got an MP3, send it to us. If you got a logo, we can make it into a video. If you want to make it into an MP4 yourself, that always helps us. But we're going to play this artist. I can't remember the name of the actual artist, but the song is called Spectrum of Love, and it features the words of Alan Watts. I think you guys will enjoy this. Quick break. We'll be right back. Got a lot more to cover. Hunter Biden, some CDC stuff, clergy, pedophiles. I mean, there's more than AI and deep fakes and tech going on, but we'll get into that when we return. Stay tuned. You're listening to Live Free, Think Free. We'll be right back.
I ask you about love. Probably quote me a song. You've never looked at a woman and been totally vulnerable. Oh my God, what an angel on earth just for you. Just could rescue you from the depths of hell. And you wouldn't know what it's like to be her angel.
On the subject of the spectrum of love. We know that from time to time there arise among human beings people who seem to exude love as naturally as the sun gives out heat. People who exude love are apt to give things away. They are in every way like rivers, they stream. And so when they collect possessions and things that they like, they are apt to give them to other people. Because if you ever notice that when you start giving things away, you keep getting more. In the same way as you empty out, you create a vacuum, nature abhors a vacuum, and more flows in. Now, so the question and the puzzle remains. You cannot imitate this thing. There is no way of getting it, and yet it is absolutely essential that we have it. because obviously the human race is not going to flourish harmoniously unless we are enabled to love each other. But the question is, how do you get it? Is it something you simply have to contract like measles? Or is, as theologians say, is it a gift of divine grace, which somehow is dished out to some but not to others? And if there is no way of getting divine grace by anything you do, as the Calvinists aver, then we better just sit around and wait until something happens. Although Calvinists never did that. They were almost depressingly energetic. But surely we can't be left in that kind of a hopeless situation. There must be some way of getting the grace or getting divine charity or love, some sort of wangle, some sort of way in which we can, as it were, open ourselves so as to become conduit pipes for the flow.
Hope y'all enjoyed that music break. I know I did. And I think there's stuff there to reflect on, to say the least.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. We haven't played that one in a while. And Alan Watts is always an interesting, whether you agree with his analysis or thoughts, it's always thought-provoking. And for those of you out there who like to sit back and toke one, maybe that was a good little break for you. We'll go ahead and jump forward. We got quite a few stories to cover. We're not going to get to everything, as always, Micah and I, when we were looking up what's happening this week? What do we want to bring to our audience? What do we see that others are ignoring, or at least maybe there's another angle that could be explored? We want to try to do that to the best of our ability as possible. So that's what we're here to do, guys. We've been doing this since 2011. Live Free, Think Free is the name of this show. And our goal is to bring you uncensored news, underground music, and even things like that. The song you just heard, or that kind of, it wasn't really much of a song, but there was some music to Alan Watts' words. Even things like that. If you put together creations like that, we would love to highlight your work, get it out there in front of our audience. And as I said earlier, these recordings, they go out all over the Conscious Resistance Network, and they go out on our Spotify, etc., where they are listened to by thousands of people every week and beyond. So we're always happy to share what you got going on. If you want to share it with us, we're happy to share it with the world. So let's go ahead, though, and dive in, Micah. We got an update on this whole Hunter Biden story. And you know what? I would say the place that I found this update was a bit surprising in the sense that there was actually some truth on CNN published this week. IRS whistleblower says tensions flared in meeting between prosecutors and investigators over Hunter Biden. And there's three different journalist names involved in this, which I find interesting. First off, what I think is interesting is that it's just kind of like you go from CNN and other outlets totally saying there's no such thing as this Hunter Biden laptop story. There's no investigation going on to Hunter Biden. There's none of this stuff happening. You know, it was all Russian disinformation. And now we know, and we've talked about this before, that the different intelligence heads who claimed this is likely Russian disinformation, that was pretty much pushed through or at least encouraged by the Biden campaign, Biden administration and the Clinton campaign, Clinton team. And that there was no hard evidence that it was ever Russian disinformation. The laptop is real. There's still ongoing investigations. And then now the mainstream has been forced to admit that Hunter Biden is under investigation for potential IRS tax fraud things going on. So there's no context of any of that. It's just funny. Like one day CNN just decides they're going to report on it. There's no kind of, yeah, there's this whole other background. We'll just jump right in and pretend like we didn't ignore this for the last 2 years. Either way, there is an unnamed whistleblower within the IRS who has been speaking to congressional investigators. And according to this new report, which is CNN said they saw a letter to the federal watchdog agency that says an attorney for an unnamed IRS whistleblower is shedding light on key meetings that expose divisions between prosecutors and investigators on how to proceed with a criminal investigation into President Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden. In a letter to the U.S. Office of Special Counsel, Tristan Levitt, one of the whistleblower's attorneys, described a series of meetings in October 2022 in which tensions flared between federal prosecutors and some investigators working on the Hunter Biden case. On October 7, 2022, the U.S. Attorney's Office became aware that both the IRS and the FBI had long-standing concerns about the handling of the case, and those concerns had been communicated to others up in the chain. And, you know, that could be interpreted all kinds of ways, Micah. The IRS and the FBI had long-standing concerns about how this case was going to be handled. That could be that people are like, hey, this is going to look bad for the Biden administration. Be careful how you handle that. Or this story shouldn't come out. Be careful how you handle that. Or I'm worried this is going to get politicized and the Republicans are going to use it in a way that misrepresents it. There's all kinds of things. We don't have the details. But what we do know is, based on CNN's reporting, they're saying they've seen this letter from the whistleblower's attorney to the U.S. attorney's office. Excuse me, the U.S. Attorney's Office, saying that there's people in the IRS and the FBI who are concerned about it. The IRS whistleblower has claimed through his attorneys that there has been political interference in the ongoing probe into the president's son. The whistleblower is set to share his concerns on the Republican-led House Ways and Means Committee on Friday, which means today. So I'm going to go ahead and search that in just a moment to see if we have anything new. So the whistleblower is supposed to be speaking today. In that letter, the whistleblower's attorney also expressed frustration that the House and Senate committees have been unable to agree on a date to jointly interview the whistleblower. So it just seems like there's probably dragging of feet going on. CNN has previously reported that there was an internal disagreement at the Justice Department about the strength of a potential case against Hunter Biden, but the letter offers new details on internal battles on how to proceed with the investigation. Prosecutors have been eyeing charges related to alleged tax crimes and a false statement, but have yet to make a charging decision. Hunter Biden has denied any wrongdoing. And I think it's clear, Micah, that no, they probably don't want to be in the position of charging a president's son. And I'm sure there are some people who are like, hey, you can't charge Hunter Biden while this presidential race is going on. This, you know, this is going to be ammo for Trump. You know, that's the problem. And we've talked about this too, Micah, that people are so afraid of the truth. We saw this a lot with COVID. They're like, there might be concerns about the shots, but don't say that because that might fuel these crazy anti-vaxxers. So don't tell them the truth because it might give them information that they use to make decisions. Yep. There could be something going on with Hunter Biden, but don't talk about that because that might give Trump ammo to turn people against Biden.
It's really interesting because the main takeaway is don't talk about what may be going on. I did find out that the House Ways and Means Committee spoke to the whistleblower for 6 hours today.
Did we get any new information? I mean, did they say anything, or is it just was this a public? I wonder if it was like if this was streamed today and we can watch it.
A second IRS whistleblower, a yet unnamed case agent who has not spoken with Congress, has also alleged retaliation for raising concerns that Justice Department leadership was acting inappropriately on the investigation into Hunter Biden. Again, you know, we don't know what that means, right? Both whistleblowers, along with the entire dozen member team, were removed from the federal investigation into Hunter Biden tax violations in May. The first whistleblower lawyers called it clearly retaliatory. So that's, I don't know if we mentioned that. I don't think we did, that this whistleblower now is suffering, you know, repercussions, basically with his career, something we see quite often.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. And like you said, Micah, for those who are watching on the screen, I'm publishing. This is just since we use CNN, I'm going to use CNN again. Obviously, there's plenty of other sources. You can, you know, you don't have to listen to anybody. You can just go listen to the 6-hour testimony that took place today, apparently. But the IRS veteran has now, at least one of them, has gone public. This is a 14-year veteran. His name is Gary Shapley. And I think this is who you're talking about, Micah. He was recently removed from the Justice Department investigation. So he's directly involved in the investigation, and then he gets removed. He spoke to CBS Evening News this week before he spoke at the House Ways and Means Committee, and he said, quote, there were multiple steps that were slow walked. We're just completely not done at the direction of the Justice Department. When I took control of this particular investigation, I immediately saw deviations from the normal process. It was way outside of the norm of what I've experienced in the past. For a couple of years, we've been noticing these deviations in the investigative process, and I just couldn't, you know, fathom that the DOJ might be acting unethically on this. So the story's not going to be ignored forever. And I'm not even saying it's the biggest thing out there to talk about or it's the only thing, but there's plenty of things that related to the Biden family I think you get into. But I do find it interesting that after all the time they tried to ignore this, here we are, and it's on the front page of CNN now. Now, they still might be trying to deny the laptop aspect of it, but they clearly now cannot deny that Hunter Biden has multiple investigations going on against him. So you make of it what you will. We'll let you guys decide.
You know, and maybe time will tell, you know, they, like you said, they can't hide the truth forever, it struggles to assert itself, right? So
absolutely. Well, I want to hit a couple of stories. We don't have to spend much time on this, but you know, there was a show we did a month or two ago, Micah, and my audio, my tech was not acting well on my side, and I think it ended up making most of the show unlistenable. So I believe this story probably got, you know, missed by our audience, but I'm going to go ahead and just reference it at least, because this is going back to early April, not too long ago. It's still worth knowing if you didn't know about it. This is from the Epoch Times, but it's reported elsewhere. CDC partners with Social and Behavior Change Initiative to silence vaccine hesitancy. And this is kind of related to what we were just talking about in terms of the Hunter Biden story, just generally speaking, trying to shut people up, trying to keep information from people. And it tells the story of this Houston area doctor, actually, Dr. Mary Talley Bowden, who's a Stanford-educated ear, nose, and throat doctor who was deplatformed throughout COVID for talking about ivermectin and questioning the shots and just different things like that. And this just goes through and shows that on November 7th, Dr. Bowden was kind of, you know, attacked online by this other doctor, an OBGYN, under the handle Mama Dr. Jones on YouTube, TikTok, and Twitter, who has millions of followers. And she came after Dr. Bowden saying she was grifting because she was rejecting the science. I noticed that term grifter seems to be very popular among the haters this last year. And so the video of the one doctor calling out the other doctor and saying she should be deplatformed received thousands of comments, including from Team Halo members, including Dr. Zachary Rubin, a pediatrician, Christina Kim, an oncology nurse practitioner. Team Halo is a social media influencer campaign formed as part of the United Nations Verified Initiative and the Vaccine Confidence Project to increase vaccine uptake. And Rubin, the pediatrician, says, this doc is problematic. And then the oncology nurse practitioner says, wow, that doctor, in quotes, should have her license revoked. 5 days after that, Mary Bowden received a text message from the Chronicle asking her if she'd like to comment on the fact that she'd been suspended by Houston Methodist Hospital. And this was the first she'd heard about it. She hadn't even been notified by the hospital yet, heard about her, you know, her hospital was letting her go because of her unpopular opinions on the internet. And this was just the tip of the iceberg. And basically this article, again, I'll encourage you to read it, but it just goes through and showing how there's this network of various doctor influencers who are part of this CDC initiative and UN initiative to fight, you know, what they call vaccine misinformation and disinformation. And it's kind of going after people. And there's another group called Shots Heard, which calls itself a rapid response digital cavalry dedicated to protecting the online safety of healthcare providers and practices. So they come into action whenever if somebody gets tags them and says, hey, we got another quack grifter doctor. We need everybody all hands on deck. And they show up and they say things like, how these loons still have licenses is beyond me. Why is an ENT even treating COVID? Things like that. And again, Shots Heard is part of the initiative, the Public Goods Project, which is a public health nonprofit that analyzes media. And that's part of one of their initiatives is called the Public Health Communications Collaborative. There's a lot of acronyms here, which is part of the CDC Foundation, which is a nonprofit arm of the CDC that we know, the U.S. government agency. So you got the CDC government agency, and the CDC has apparently a nonprofit arm called the CDC Foundation. And it's under that which a lot of these organizations, the Public Goods Project, Shots Heard, and then the other one that I read, what was it called? But basically all these type of things. So when you start to untangle this web and you look at the different people who's involved, where's the funding come from, you get a lot of the same faces, Rockefeller Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Soros, others. And that's not a dog whistle to anybody. It's just those are the people that are funding these things, and make of that what you will. But it's just more information to show us that the government agencies partnering with tech companies, nonprofits, et cetera, to silence opinions online and views online that are not very popular. And I think it's something that we should really think about. And so that was a story that's 2 months old, but we think it's worth you guys knowing about. I'll add one more to that also that we reported on previously, but the audio wasn't that great. New analysis shows that the CDC spread false information that exaggerated the severity of COVID-19. We covered this. This was from The Pulse, aka Collective Evolution. And they go through and show that academics from the University of California published a new paper titled Statistical and Numerical Errors Made by the CDC During the COVID Pandemic, which outlines at least 25 instances where the CDC reported statistical or numerical errors. 20 80% of these instances, according to researchers, exaggerated the severity of the COVID-19 situation. They explain how the CDC was notified about the errors in 16 instances and later corrected the errors, at least partially, in 13 of those instances. As it points out, it's quite ironic that inaccurate and misleading information labels were put on various scientific papers, posts made by experts in the field, and more throughout the pandemic, yet the CDC themselves have been outed multiple times for spreading misinformation. And do you think that the CDC went back and corrected any of the mistakes they made after the public was terrified out of their minds? Here's a tweet from one of the doctors, Tracy Hoag, MD, PhD. In our new paper, we find 25 basic data errors made by CDC re-COVID-19 of 16 cases pertinent to kids alone, 15, 94% of the cases, exaggerated risk. Not only are they making basic mistakes, but they tend to mislead in the same direction, this study says. And so it goes on from there. But again, how many of these headlines are making?
That's got to be thought about, like the way they're misleading and the mistakes are going in the same direction. It'd be one thing if, oh, our errors somehow gave us more money, but all the errors are taking money away. You get what I'm saying here? I think that was a very important point. And maybe it's just accidental, but I don't know. When you think about, like, this is something new. We had never had COVID, right? You think that all the answers wouldn't just be there somehow landing on the alphabet soup CDC's brain to be able to disseminate to the little people. You would imagine that people in the field might all be doing different studies, coming up with different answers. But, you know, how can they do that in an environment where it's like thought crime to think or express, even if you're wrong? You know, even if you're wrong, I think that it's really dangerous when you go through just deliberately cutting out expression and cutting out, you know, saying someone's not a doctor because their viewpoint on something that isn't fully understood yet is off on the from the cutting edge of what people with an agenda have to drive. And like you said, you know, they over exaggerated the risk in a startling percentage of the cases that were wrong. And so you got to think, well, what's that do? Well, that causes people to act in a certain way. They think it's scarier. The terrorists are worse. The COVID is worse. Give me the shots. I don't care that it's an emergency vaccine. Just give it to me. Meanwhile, you got the vaccine thing trying to move through social media with this other name. So you don't even, your average person doesn't go, oh, this is the government. This is the CDC. No, this is the project for better breathing, you know, or whatever pretty name they get on it. So it can look like a different door, a different front door, rather than the people who are trying to control the narrative. And I don't believe that it's okay if you're a doctor and you know that this treatment doesn't work to not speak up and say that doctor, I'd like to, you know, we need to look at their results because DDT is not good for you, you know, or this is poison. But to just like do the, like there wasn't explanations of the wrong, there wasn't discussion, there weren't, you know, any of that stuff occurring. There wasn't, oh, they're wrong because they didn't look at this part of the study, and clearly after being exposed to this for more than x amount of time, it hits another level of badness or something. I never heard any of that. All we ever heard, and we were paying attention to the news, all we ever heard was anyone saying anything against the narrative is wrong. And I mean, that's really
and so that's why I wanted to kind of pair these two stories together, Micah, because so one is like studies saying the CDC exaggerated claims and we have evidence of that. And that's not to say that they examined every single claim made in the last 3 years, but then partner that with CDC working with different groups to silence people questioning vaccine hesitancy. So on one hand, we know that they're exaggerating. On the other hand, they're silencing anybody who asks questions. Clearly, those things are not working in the favor of truth, freedom of speech, et cetera.
They work good for Pfizer. Either one of those mistakes works really good for Big Pharma.
I agree.
And for controlling the populace.
I agree. We're down to our last few minutes here, guys. You're listening to Live Free, Think Free, 90.1 KPFT. Houston is sometimes a partner of us, and we broadcast on the Conscious Resistance Network. We're live right now on Rockfin Odyssey. I'm going to give you guys another chance. If anybody wants to say anything on Rockfin or Odyssey, feel free to chime in. We'll share your comments. Got three more stories before we wrap up. Micah, these ones, I think, pretty much these are ones you brought in. I'm sure I'll have something to add. But let's start with the FBI breaking the law more than 278,000 times. What is this all about?
Yeah, I thought y'all might appreciate that. You know, this is kind of back to something that we've been talking about for years now, you know, FISA and surveillance of American citizens. Turns out that the FBI made 278,000 illegal searches under Section 702 of the FISA database to target suspects of the January 6th riot, George Floyd protesters, victims of crimes, and donors of a congressional candidate. You know, these are things that back when we first started hearing about the surveillance of Americans in this way and the use of this data, people were saying, oh, they could manipulate Congress. They could, you know, hide crimes. They might silence protests. Wow. It sounds like this is exactly what they're looking into. And over 200, and these are 278,000 cases that they know about. This came from a recently unsealed court document. The FBI has come under fire from lawmakers and activists for abusing this Section 702 in searching for communications of Americans without a warrant. You know, are you surprised? I mean, we got thought control. Now you're going to, what's a warrant? That's slowing down, keeping people in line. The Bureau has claimed it has implemented procedure changes to reduce this noncompliance with the rules. See, they're not saying they're not going to do it anymore. They're just going to reduce the noncompliance with the rules. These are the very people who want to tell you to follow the law. This seems very similar to that last story in a way, right? These are the guys that tell you what the law, like they arrest you for breaking the law. Yeah, they got over 278,000 illegal searches against U.S. citizens. I just kind of want to stress that point. I hate that word, but at the same time, this stuff is illegal in order to protect the very people that are being damaged by it. But the FBI doesn't seem to care. I don't know if it's Federal Bureau of Intimidation or what on this. It's only supposed to search the database if an agent is sure. You know, and I think of the no-knock raids, right? As long as you're sure there's something dangerous there, you know, as long as the agent is sure, then they will get evidence that they're sure they will get evidence of a crime or information relevant to foreign intelligence. The FISA court threatened to take action if the FBI doesn't improve compliance. Court found almost 300,000 cases of noncompliance between just 2020 and 2021. I mean, so that's a lot of noncompliance. And maybe I'm one of these weird people who actually expects these agencies to be held to at least as high a standard as they try to act like anybody who didn't have their seatbelt on would be held to. You know, so it's there's a lot more going on in the story. They go on and say that between 2016 and 2020, the court said that agents made searches about, quote, individuals listed in police homicide reports, including victims, next of kin, witnesses, and suspects. There's a violation of the rules because, quote, there was no reasonable basis to expect they would return foreign intelligence or even evidence of a crime. Following the, you know, January 6th, riot. FBI employees searched the database 23,000 times on U.S. citizens to find evidence of possible foreign influence, although the analysts conducting the queries had no indications of foreign influence related to the query term used. So they weren't looking for it in the query, but they hoped they would stumble on it. And that was also a violation.
For me, this is, for one, the Trump supporters and Trump himself brought some attention to the FISA courts because it was used against Trump, some of Trump's people early in 2016. There's talk about, you know, the FISA court. Trump doesn't know how to speak correctly, so he says, like, they were wiretapping me. But he's talking about the FISA court. But then at the same time, what I always thought was interesting is Trump plays a lot of lip service to the deep state. If there is any such, I mean, I do think there is deep state, whatever, however you want to label that. But if there's an aspect of it that is very public, or at least known by the public, it's the FISA courts. I mean, they're a secretive court where they do secret warrants on people. Like, why would you not attack that and go after that? It seems to be such an obvious target if you're really truly after, like, the entrenched deep state that's going after people that we don't know anything about, writing secret warrants with secret judges. You know, to me, this is just a clear, and this is, as one of your other stories is going to show in a moment, this is an outgrowth of the war on terror, of 9/11, the post-9/11 world.
Certainly. And it wasn't just, you know, the January 6th protesters. There was also the George Floyd protesters and the riots around that. Turns out in June of 2020, the FBI queried the database for the communications of 133 protesters who were arrested. So keep that in mind. The FBI argued that it was reasonable to assume that the searches would return foreign intelligence information. Around the same time, an analyst made 656 queries to look for derogatory information to coerce people to be informants. The court said the agency had no reason to believe that they would get the information they were looking for. So, yeah, I mean,
stuff.
Yeah.
And well, go ahead.
I'm just going to say it's pretty obvious how dangerous this sort of behavior is and why it would, if you're even going to have a government and have rules at all, why maybe this type of behavior by the government in a liberal society would be prohibited. Just saying.
Yeah, and there was a comment a couple moments ago that I felt like was fitting here. Maybe I can't remember it now, but just in general, there's too many. Oh yeah, this one. So much corruption, so little time. Right? I mean, like we're telling you guys a few stories that we picked up in our travels the last week, and I'm sure there's. I mean, we know there's 100 other podcasts happening right now telling you other important things going on. We do try to pick up stories that we think are being underreported, even if sometimes it's coming off of CNN.com. Doesn't necessarily mean it's being given the time or the analysis that it deserves. But we're going to go ahead and pick up here with one of our other perennial topics that is at least worth a mention. And this is the fact that we have more evidence of pedophiles getting into positions of authority, this time more churches, and a new report coming from Illinois. So let's find out all about this, Micah.
Yeah, this should be pretty quick. It turns out that in Illinois, the prosecutor there, the state prosecutor, says that more than 450 Catholic clergy, and this is just picking one, I guess you could call them authorities, right? Religious authorities. And this is just the state of Illinois. We're not talking big old California, New York, or Texas. But yeah, it turns out that more than 450 Catholic authorities in Illinois sexually abused nearly 2,000 children since 1950. That's just their basic news that come out, right? This is more than they thought. The state's attorney general found an investigation released Tuesday revealing that the problem was much worse than the church had led on. And this is that same thing, right? They downplayed it. And we see this with corporations. We see this with government. We see this every time authority comes under any fire for its misdeeds. The initial report, oh, it's not that bad. And I imagine that that's probably the same case with the FISA, with the FBI violations, right? Turns out that the state attorney general said that in a news conference that investigators found this large new amount, and he acknowledged that the statute of limitations expired in many of these cases and that the abusers will never see justice in a legal sense. So, you know, there's more going on in that story if you want to get into it, but I just want to point out that we talked about the story when it came around because it's another one of these things, just like the school abuse, where the youngest are most vulnerable because the people who are supposed to be their guardians, who are supposed to look out for them, their parents, their whatever they may be, are believing in this authority enough to leave their children alone with it, whether it's a school or a religious authority or if it's just anyone you don't know. Why would you just trust them because they have, you know, some little special ranking thing? I get it if you know them and you have some respect for that and they've developed it. But just because, oh, they're a teacher, or oh, they're the school officer, or oh, they're a minister or a priest or a layperson in this or that religion, so it should be okay. God says they're okay, so I'm just going to leave baby, you know, little baby me here with them, and it should be okay. So I'm sorry to go on too long about it. It's been a while since we touched one of these stories, and I think the main reason we go to it is because for a lot of these children, this is their first interaction with authority, and obviously it is on the school side. So it's very disturbing when it's the school, because then it's a state actor, right?
I agree. Coming
from this authority.
I think that these stories always deserve time, even if it is just to acknowledge, guys, here's another, you know, when I tweeted this story out earlier this week, my comment was, when is the world going to acknowledge that pedophiles have infiltrated into positions of authority? I don't know if it's a personality thing, sociopaths, psychopaths, whatever, or if it just comes along with the territory. I don't know, but we've covered in the last 11 years churches from Southern Baptist to Mormon Church to Jehovah's Witnesses to the Catholic Church, obviously, to schools and the teachers, the school security guards, you know, politicians, obviously, celebrities, actors, you know, it just goes on. And it's always involving a position of authority, or like you said, Micah, where a parent is, for whatever reason, trusting their child in the company of this other adult or adults. And unfortunately, history and the evidence, as we're seeing here, is showing that bad things happen to these kids.
And I'm not trying to just blame the parents here, but in the long run, no one else is going to be responsible for your kid. And I do think sometimes it is just sloppy thinking, you know, to be so trusting. You know, it's sloppy thinking. It flies in the face of the facts on the ground. It flies in the face of the news. It flies in the face of just being prudent. If you don't know that person, when we talk about it with the schools, what do? Go up there once a year to parent-teacher night and hope you know that person that your kid spends all the time alone with? I think that getting people to just trust everyone like that is dangerous. And it's also this very reason that the wolf is attracted to the hen house. You know, they will, you know, try to dress them up in a guise of credibility. That's what they're hoping with authority, right? If I'm a credible person, you know, if I volunteer for philanthropy and charities, then, you know, people will think of me as this good person. And, you know, I don't want to discount people that do something good. But when we're talking about the negatives and how they, you know, rust never sleeps and they insinuate themselves into these places, it's because of the fact that they gain credibility. Based on the uniform they wear or the, you know, guise that they're in. It's not like really understood and thought out. It's just accepted by someone who doesn't have time and has to hurry up and go to work. So they leave their kid there or something.
Yeah, I think it's also things like the assumption, and I couldn't say offhand if this is the case all the time or not, but the assumption that somebody at a church, there's a background check has taken place, or a teacher, like surely this person has been vetted to some degree. And clearly that's not always the case, as we find out. Well, let's go ahead and end this show, Micah, with this last story that you pulled up that I think is relevant in terms of what we've been talking about tonight. This related to U.S. post-wars displacing and killing millions of people, post 9/11 wars. What's this all about?
You know, I thought we'd just get in and out of it pretty quickly, because I think a lot of people don't want to think about the death that has been caused post 9/11. I mean, that wasn't that long ago. But it turns out that it's Brown University has done some studies here, and it turns out that my computer messed up just for a second. Yeah, so these U.S. post 9/11, and they call them wars, you know, basically military conflicts, sending our troops somewhere. The people never voted for a war on this, and Congress never declared war. They just approved funding and then, you know, pretend like they never, you know, backed a war. But they didn't abandon our boys. They approved the funding. So nonetheless, these U.S. post 9/11 wars have now caused 4.5 million deaths and displaced between 38 and 60 million people. I mean, that's pretty disturbing when you think about just the military intervention in the last 22 years has, you know, killed more people than are in Houston and displaced, you know, more than 10 times the number of people that are in Houston. And, basically, now there's 7.6, that's twice Houston, million children starving because of this. You know, and I just want people to think about this for a minute, because, you know, we've heard about the CIA's term of blowback, and, you know, people don't like it when, you know, right or wrong, they don't like it when you hurt their relatives. And out of it, you're going to find someone who's going to want to seek vengeance. Maybe it's irrational, etc. And these killing and these wars, they just make more and more. So it's pretty disturbing. They say nearly a million of the people who lost their lives died in fighting. So that's less than a quarter. Whereas some 3.6 to 3.7 million deaths were indirect deaths. You know, indirect deaths. How many people died in 9/11? Wasn't it like a few thousand? And, you know, so let's go ahead and add some zeros to the back of that. And they say these were indirect deaths due to health and economic problems that are caused by wars. You know, diseases, malnutrition, destruction of infrastructure. And that's not even talking about sanctions, you know, that hurt children. It's really unnerving. The report also analyzed the effects of the war in Libya and Somalia. The scholars estimated that in the country studied, there were still today 7.6 million children under the age of five. Like, they're suffering, who are suffering from acute malnutrition. They are not getting enough food, literally wasting to skin and bones. And, you know, that we've covered before how that affects the development of a child's mind, et cetera. In Afghanistan and Yemen, this includes nearly 50% of the children there. And in Somalia, close to 60% of the children. In a separate study, Brown's Cost of Wars Project found that the U.S. post-9/11 wars displaced 38 million people at least, more than any conflict since the turn of the century, except for World War II. This report said it is a very conservative estimate. The total displaced by U.S. post-9/11 wars would probably be closer to 49 to 60 million, which would then rival World War II displacement. So, you know, this article goes on and covers much more than I've already covered, but I just wanted to kind of remind people this is serious. More than half of Afghanistan's population is in extreme poverty, living on less than $1.90 a day. Staggering 95% of Afghans do not have enough food. In Yemen, more than 17.5 million people are food insecure, and 85,000 children under age of five have likely died from starvation. So, I mean, I don't know that we're always considering all these costs in this, you know, I voted for the funding, you know. Maybe that's something we need to kind of be more conscious of, you know. They couldn't really get away with hiding it during Vietnam and some of these other things, but I feel like they've done a pretty good job of getting everybody hyped up against terrorism and these different despots that they don't like, you know, Saddam and Gaddafi and the North Korean guy, you know, that we're not there yet, but the others. So I don't know. Was it worth it? Was it worth 4.5 million deaths and 60 million people displaced? Never mind the trillions of dollars cost that might've gone into helping people here live, helping people there live. I don't know. War is a racket. War is, you know, just a bunch of people who couldn't figure out what was going on quick enough, and this is their knee-jerk reaction. We're going to change something. We're going to force them. We'll be the big heroes. And this is the cost of it. And it's done in your name, like it or not. You can say you're not a citizen. You can go to another country or whatever you want. But in the long run, it's really, in history, it's going to be done in your name. They're not going to understand, the next generation, why everybody sat by in America and let the atrocities happen. They're going to, you know, indirectly hold you, along with the whole collective of America, responsible for it. And so if we don't take some responsibility and try to do something about it to go against the wars, I don't see it getting any better.
I agree, Micah. I tend to agree. And it's unfortunate because I feel like those numbers, like, how do you even really fathom millions of people dead over decisions that we had no control over, and based on the lie of 9/11, and I think it's a lie no matter which angle you look at it. It's hard to even just fathom, right? And then here we are 22 years later, and people are just going about their lives, and we'll come up on an anniversary in a couple months, and they'll say, never forget, and it'll be all that patriotism and stuff. And it's really hard, I think, for people to grasp those numbers and to understand how real it is for somebody living in Afghanistan or Yemen or Somalia or Syria, et cetera, et cetera.
Meanwhile, Libya. They're saber rattling in Ukraine. Everybody needs to wave a flag and send some money and some weapons, right?
I mean, don't dare question it.
The Russian bear, and then what? Taiwan, after all, that's not part of China. I mean, we got to fight that. We swore. Let's send Pelosi over there to land and saber rattle some more, and let's start getting Philippines and Japan to start militarize, you know? So, no, we haven't gotten any wiser about this three-letter word war as a species, as a nation, or anything. And, you know, here we see in our news articles today, war on the people here, spying on them, millions of deaths on war in other countries. It's, you know, we think the 20th century was the century of warfare. It may be that the 21st is worse if we don't do something about it.
Especially with AI-powered war.
Yeah, they're actually already saying that it's outpaced anything in the 20th century, unless we go with the real numbers, and then it outpaced World War II as far as displacement. Maybe it didn't outpace in terms of depth yet, but we're only 21 years in.
We got this comment from Luis Phillips over on YouTube, and he brought up this word that I haven't heard in a while, which is a good reminder that this is known as democide, death by government, death by, you know, democracy. And not only the U.S., the U.S., as you said, is kind of setting the record for the 21st century. We'll see how China and others do when they bring in their AI-powered warfare. But you can look back throughout history and see different governments causing the deaths of hundreds of thousands, millions of people. And that not all the same ideology, communist, fascist, different, you know, even democratic governments causing, as we're seeing with the United States. Well, one last thing, Mike, I want to mention. This is just kind of an interesting note. You remember this? This is Micah Jackson.
Yes, I do.
2012, 10 years ago, September 2012, we were at Paul Fest in Tampa Bay, Florida, during the RNC, Republican National Convention. And the gentleman on the left is Stuart Rhodes, as you can see the sign above, Oath Keepers. This is when the Oath Keepers came about in 2011, around the Obama times, when we had the NDAA codify indefinite detention of American citizens. And the Oath Keepers, one of the groups coming out and saying, like, we want to encourage cops and officers to say we won't stand up against our own people. And I thought it was a pretty cool idea. And I still think, generally speaking, the idea is great. Obviously, a lot has changed in the last 10 years, as Stuart Rhodes has now been sentenced to 18 years in prison as a domestic terrorist for his role in January 6th. I'm not here to say whether that's correct or not, but it is definitely going to send a message for sure.
The stories about it, when you read the articles, you know, you read an article about someone who killed someone, you know what I'm saying? You read an article about someone who killed someone, you're going to be like, police found the fingerprints, the smoking gun, or it's believed that he did it because of this. All the articles I've read so far, I haven't really figured out how they managed to do this. So they brought some guns and they had them in the hotel room and they didn't take them. He didn't take them there. You know, I think it's, I'm not trying to say he's a political prisoner, but a lot of people are. And he himself is saying so. Given what we have talked about with the FBI getting into people's business, we know that they definitely got into, we read about them getting into stuff around January 6th. Also, when we read about how the CDC manipulated data, willingly or unwillingly, I don't believe that this is any different than any other data. I'm not saying I know the man is innocent at all. I'm just saying it's awful suspicious. And I think that if he had been involved in sedition, you know, to blow up Parliament or something, there ought to be a better smoking gun. Maybe I'm missing the point. Maybe someone can clarify it for me. I know he said we should have taken guns and then they would have been afraid of us. And so that was like one of the main things I see over and over in these articles. But people say stuff like that all the time.
Yeah. I think that they're basically making him out to be the mastermind, because as when you were interviewing him back in 2012, he's the founder of the Oath Keepers. So there was a contingent of Oath Keepers who showed up there and they had text messages or things about like, oh yeah, we're going to stand by for Trump's orders or whatever. You know, they really, I feel bad, honestly, because like the other two other Oath Keepers were sentenced this week. One, he got 18 years, one got 12. One got six. And obviously, when you're being sentenced to prison, you probably feel like you got to say a lot of remorse. Who knows if they really feel that way. But I do think there was a lot of people who got caught up in the hysteria. And as we now know, that January 6th did have presence of FBI and others. We still don't know the complete truth of who was working for who and who was amping people up and like, yeah, go in there and, you know, burn it down and getting everybody all hyped up. And in the heat of the moment, maybe people thought, this is it. We're finally taking our government back, you know, right or wrong. And people bought into that, you know.
The news about it was much like COVID and much like terrorism. This horrible thing happened. And they show us that, like, people that were in there that later we find out were let in. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that exactly. Mr. Rhodes here is innocent or guilty. I don't know. It's hearsay to me. But I will say that the system by which we hear what's going on has profound difficulties in delivering an adequate version of reality or the truth of events. And I do believe, just like with COVID, they set this stuff up while it was going. They're talking about it. It's so bad. It's a riot. It's a revolution. It's all this stuff, right? And then after the fact, nobody really goes back and says, okay, never mind all that. There are some people there. There were some bad actors. There were a lot of people. And in that. They weren't all bad actors. Look, here's some where the police are opening the doors for them. Here, they're letting them in. Here, the guy's walking and talking to them. You know, no, when they first showed the guy with the, you know, that was, look at this crazy guy. He seized Congress, this guy with the bullhorns or whatever it was. And then later they show that very guy with the door being opened by, you know, the public servant and all that. So I don't believe anything I hear from there because it's all just hearsay. Yet you want me to doubt artificial intelligence more?
Yeah. Well, we're going to leave it there, guys. And I just wanted to throw that in there, Micah, because isn't it crazy how things change in 10 years? 10 years ago at the Ron Paul campaign, you know, standing up Oath Keepers, and then 10 years later, now he's going to prison for 18 years. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
There's another story. I know we don't have time to get into it today. Maybe I'll bring it to another episode. It kind of dispels a misnomer that I've been hearing for a while that, and I think Biden's even reiterated this one, you've heard it, that we have something to fear from veterans, that veterans are, you know, on the edge of being domestic terrorists. Well, there was a study recently done, and I forgot who it was right now. It was one of these think tanks, and they only, is a small sample, only 1,000 veterans were questioned, but in it, they also questioned, you know, they had the stats from the mainstream, and it was stuff like, do you identify with this? Do you, and how do you feel about this? Just different things. I'll bring it. But the little article, the study they did, dispels that veterans are any more disposed towards domestic terrorism than the general population. Like the stats that came from the general population were actually a little bit worse than what veterans were confessing. And parts of it, I was like, oh, bummer. I wish the guys would stand up for this. And then on other parts were like, whoo, thank goodness. You know, so I think it's easy to point the finger and say everyone's to blame, put them in this box. We got to start tracking everyone. And, you know, the reason I bring up the whole veterans thing is it's obvious that Oath Keepers was a veterans affiliated type of organization. Yeah. And so them saying that sort of stuff, the MIAC report decades ago or whatever, even like I said, Biden's been recently saying it too. This whole fear of
now, the veterans, claim is that the veterans and the police have been infiltrated by white supremacy. That, you know, that's where it's the predominantly coming from, ex-military and police. So
yeah,
they're going to continue spreading that propaganda. But yeah, I think it is an important point, guys. It's been a fun show. We're out of time. We're going to play one more song as we close out. Website is thehoustonfreethinkers.com. Search Live Free Think Free on your favorite podcasting platform to find the archives of our show. And by tomorrow, I'll have up all the links for everything that we talked about today. If you want to find out more, it's been a good show, Micah. Thanks for being here with me. And we're going to take a couple weeks off. I'm headed to the UK next week, and the week after that, I'll be coming back. So expect new shows. I'll be back in Houston very soon. So Micah and I will get to be doing some shows in person. Looking forward to that and hoping to connect with more of you guys. That's all I got, man. Anything else?
No, y'all, just don't let this stuff drag you down. The analysis is important because that's what they don't do. They don't analyze it. They don't question it. They just plow it out, yell it out at you, and you hear it on 50 different channels, and, you know, That's the difference. Do the analysis, your ideas, the things that don't sit right with you. Do the deeper research and take the time to love yourself and love those around you. Because in the end, thinking about the world and thinking about what's going on the global stage and the new world order and even the horrible elites in your city or, you know, the horrible authoritarians in power, it takes away from what we can do with freedom quite often. It takes away our exercising our freedom to change the world that we live in. So don't get too caught up in that. They want you to. They want you to think the world's going to end if you don't go their way. But guess what? If you take care of your world, it probably isn't going to end. So I know that kind of sounds crazy, but take care of yourself. Take care of your loved ones. See you next time we're on here. Thanks for supporting me.
Thank you, guys. See you soon, Micah. We're going to end with Escape from the Zoo, 12 Rounds, Houston band. Check it out. We'll see you soon.
selfish haze.
Putting family after fun, always looking out for number one. I can't close that shame, cause now that the fog's rolled out, I see how deeply flawed I used to be. And I'm by no stretch perfect now, but at least I possess the tools to take a setback, gain some perspective, away your head's eye. Take a deep breath, test and think so. Take a second to rest.
Really, average is logic, I weigh emotions, so
gotta change people level head. But still some days I feel like smashing this guitar. Going from round the corner, because someday